Welcome back, everyone. I'm Shannon Laird, and you're listening to BME Radio. Before we begin, I need to make a quick announcement, which is that this will probably be the last BME Radio interview until September, because starting on Sunday the 13th, I'll be taking a big road trip from Toronto to LA and back. So for the first time in about 5 years, I'll be spending more than 3 days offline, and I figure I'll be gone about 2 weeks. Anyway, with us today, we've got Louise Garcia, a piercer and body modification artist whose work you've definitely seen if you've spent any time browsing BME's picture galleries. Not only is he one of the first clients that got pierced using surface bars, but he's also aggressively promoted them now as a piercer himself. In addition, he's explored other body modification, including scarification and tongue splitting. Louise, thanks for talking to us today.
No problem, Shannon. It's a pleasure.
Louise, I think the first time that I met you, you were in Toronto for a NetGoths meeting or munch. So I wanted to ask you, what's the role that the online world has played in your career?
It's played a lot. Pretty much, it's how I got started and it's how I saw modifications first, beyond just your typical piercings that you see on the street. You know, and through BME and RAB, things like that, news groups, it's where the information started to come in. I started to learn more. It's how I ended up calling Tom Bradza and asking him about surface bars. And that's how I ended up going to Toronto in the first place to get work done by him and just to talk to him. It's played a huge part. And then just sending pictures to BME, it gets work out there. It shows what people can do. And that can be good or bad either way, agreed. But it's definitely played a huge part. I would say it's helped forwarding my career a lot through receiving information, being able to contact other piercers all across the world, learning new things. I'm a big believer in you can never know enough. The day that you think that you know it all is the day that you have failed, that you can't know it all. I learned things from anyone. I went to the APP convention and I picked up so much information there from so many good piercers. Just chit-chatting back and forth, being like, hey, you know, well, I do this way. Oh, well, I do this that way. Hey, that makes sense. And it's just how you progress. It's evolution of sorts. It helps with the evolution.
Mm-hmm. When you came up and got the piercings done by Tom, were you already a piercer at that point?
Or that was during my apprenticeship. That was New Year's Eve, I think, 96, 97. So that was probably during my, like, the last half a year, last 8 months of my apprenticeship.
Mm-hmm. And then you worked at Perforations for a few years more.
Yeah, I worked there.
And then you headed over to Infinite in Philadelphia after you left there.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Now Infinite's a shop that had a lot of rumors flying about it online. When people hear about a shop online, how do you think they should? Do you think they should take it with a grain of salt, or how reliable is what you hear about studios online?
I think it depends. I think it depends on the circumstance, and it depends on who it's coming from. You're going to have some people, you're never going to be able to please everyone. And yeah, certain things, you know, all things considering Infinite, certain things came around that were definitely not great to hear about, but they get fixed and people work on things. Someone could go on Rec Art Body Art and say, oh, well, I went into Infinite and I had a really bad time there. I was treated poorly. But then five other people could go on and respond to that and say, hey, well, I've been a client of theirs for a long time and I've never had a problem. It all depends. It all depends on who the person is, who the client is coming in, what kind of attitude they have, how they're going to receive the information we want to give them. For example, a lot of people get really upset because we turn away navels. We don't pierce every navel that comes in the door. We want to make sure that it's going to be a healable navel piercing, and some people just aren't built to heal a navel piercing comfortably. You know, a navel piercing that's going to take 2 years to heal, that's a lot of work every day, cleaning, care, just not touching it, not fidgeting with it. It's a lot of things to come into. A lot of people don't respond well to that. They automatically think you're discriminating. I've heard everything from being called a racist. When I'm Latino, I'm a racist. Okay. I'm Latino and I'm gay. I'm a racist and a homophobe. I've been called a homophobe because I wouldn't pierce this one man's navel. And I just looked at him. I was like, I'm gay. How am I a homophobe? People can take it in any way. I would say if you see bad words out there about a piercing studio, look into it. If it's in your town, talk to other people that have been pierced there. You know, it's word of mouth. There's going to be people around, also besides the internet, that you can verify those things. If you If you see something bad, but you see something good, contact both of those people. See whose story feels better. See what sounds better to you. If all else fails, go into the store. Wait out. You don't have to go in and get pierced. There's no requirement on that. Go in there, look around, see how you get treated by the counter people. Ask to speak to a piercer if you have any piercing questions. See how you get treated by the piercer. See what kind of vibe you get from that. That's the main thing. You can't just go on word of mouth.
Well, I definitely agree with you on the go-in rule, because I think even people who give a studio a very positive review, I mean, most people really, I think even after they've been pierced a few times, they don't necessarily know what to look for, and I think some of the most vocal people don't know what to look for.
Yeah, I agree.
So there are a lot of bad recommendations flying around, on BME as well as in other places.
Yes.
I'm gonna branch over to something you were telling me about before we went to tape. Now, you were saying there's a Republican convention going on in Philadelphia right now. And that has negatively affected the pierced and tattooed community.
It did a little bit. We had the Republican National Convention here in Philadelphia, which to a certain point, yeah, brought Philadelphia lots of business, lots of people, but it also brought some protesters. And yeah, you know, people speak out. That's all cool. I had no problem with any of the protesters, but the local law enforcement didn't take it very well. So they put out a little bulletin saying, watch out for the following. And the first two on the list among the top ones were, watch out for people with piercings and watch out for people with heavy invisible tattoos. And it came down on us a little bit in a little altercation recently. And, you know, me and the rest of the people involved really didn't feel like the policeman treated us fairly, just simply because of the way we looked. And they actually voiced it bluntly and didn't care. So it did affect it. It did affect it in a poor way, I think. It left a sour taste in my mouth. Mm-hmm. Over the local law enforcement after that.
Well, I definitely want to tell the story of this altercation. To set it up, this is a friend of yours, a woman that works at a studio, which is an established business. It's been a tax-paying member of this community for quite a few years now. As far as I know, there have never been any, you know, legal problems with it, and the police have absolutely no reason to treat it differently than the bookstore next door.
Not only where the policemen have no reason to treat it, but the sergeant that ended up coming, because we ended up asking for a supervisor.
Well, keep in mind, we haven't told this story on the air, so
let's tell the story and then we'll get to that. My friend was working at the store that she pierces at, and these people came in looking to get pierced, blah, 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 and a verbal altercation ensued, basically. It was a situation where the customers didn't have everything that was needed. They didn't have ID. They were just being rude, overly rude. When they went to go leave after some words, they didn't close the door. Jen said, please close the door. Didn't happen, so she went outside and said, why didn't you close the door? What's going on? Do you live in a barn? Just typical Philly. Anyone who's been in Philly knows the attitude. Like, typical Philly words. Nothing. You should have taken that with a grain of salt. Well, the gentleman turned around, walked right up to her back in the store and said, what the fuck did you say? Fuck you. And she was like, well, fuck you back. Typical response, too. You tell someone fuck you, don't get mad when they tell you fuck you back. And he spit in her face, he slapped her, he punched her, and grabbed her by the hair, tried to drag her out of the store. Couldn't get her by the hair, grabbed her shirt, tore her shirt, and dragged her out of the store. So at this point, the tattoo artists are getting involved. It's a blatant assault by a man on a woman, a man twice her size. Unacceptable. Fight moves out onto the street. At this point is when I noticed what was happening from down the street. I see the girlfriend had gotten involved. My friend was fighting with the girlfriend, and they were just fighting at first. I was like, oh, she's fighting a girl. She can handle herself. Then I see the gentleman come up and punch her in the face. And I was like, no. And I ran down the street. And, he was tough for a couple of seconds. And then he realized how many people on this street, a street with 4 or 5 tattoo and piercing studios right on there. All of us are fairly friendly. Some people aren't. Most of us are. And we see one of our good friends, who's a woman, getting beat up partially by a man, partially by a woman. there's going to be bad stuff happening. So we're coming around, and, you know, it's culminating in just a big crowd watching right on 4th Street. Gentleman had a cell phone. He's like, I'm being assaulted. Calls 911. I need a police officer here. I'm being assaulted. So he made the first call. That's probably where it started right there. They assumed, since he was the one calling saying he was assaulted, that's probably where they took it from. Because we didn't call the cops. It was like, it's a fight. Sometimes fight just whatever. You don't have to call the cops. Policemen show up. Automatically, it's just very, very nice to these people. Very, very nice to these other people who are just, I would say, what most people would consider normal. No visible tattoos. No visible piercings. He's a big, buff dude. She's like, nice little girl. And they're cursing and yelling. And, you know, my friend Jen is bleeding out of her nose. They tore her nostril screw out. Her shirt is ripped. Neither of them have a scratch on them. Neither of these other two people have a single scratch on them. And all of a sudden, you know, we're being told that we have to step away. We're being told that they can't do anything because they didn't see the altercation. It turns into this big mess right in front of the policeman, and the policeman, you know, my friend Jen is crying. She's asking if she can be taken to this, you know, taken to be to make a report now. They said they couldn't give her a ride. Lo and behold, it turns out when we moved away, one of the tattoo artists that works at Philadelphia Eddie's overheard them saying, "Oh, yeah, we can give you a ride. We'll give you a ride to your car. Do you need a ride home? Don't have a car? Oh, it's okay. Don't worry about it, man. We take care of our own." He ended up being a corrections officer. So automatically, there's another thing, connecting them, bonding them, and it was just bad from then on. One of the policemen was being particularly rude, cursing lots of different things, and I told him, I was like, "Why are you cursing? Why are you yelling at us? We're not yelling at you. We have problems with them. Why are you being rude?" And he's like, "I can do whatever the fuck I want." And I was like, "What's," right then and there, I was like, "What's your badge number? Who's your sergeant? What's your name?" He took his shirt, put it right in front of my face. He's like, "There's my fucking badge number. You want it? You want it?" Just a bad scene. Left a really bad taste in my mouth. Just, ugh. Really, really, really bad. They ended up, you know, actually saying, you know, "What do you expect? Look at you guys. Look at them. They're clean-cut people. Well, pierced tattoos. You guys look like a biker gang."
Mm-hmm.
What's that? That's no good.
Yeah.
No good. That's blatant discrimination right there.
Not that the Philly police have a particularly good reputation in general.
Exactly. A couple weeks before the convention, look, they already had another incident of, you know, beating, excessive beating of someone. It's bad. Yeah, they don't have a great reputation.
Mm-hmm.
Needless to say.
All right, we're gonna take a music break. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about Philly, because Philly's sort of a funny town, and I think worth talking about.
Maria, Virgine, Gaudete, tempus tades nat Hundeluk sex orta salus in venitur. Gaudete, gaudete, Christus est natus. Vex Maria Virgine, gaudete. Gaudete, gaudete, Christus est natus. Vex Maria Virgine, gaudete. Ergo nostra concio, salatiam in lustro. Benedicato salus regi nostro. Tempus ades gratiae hoc adoptabamus, carmina letitiae te vote redamus. Gaudete, gaudete, Christus est natus, ex Maria Virgine, gaudete. Gaudete, gaudete, Christus est natus, ex Maria Virgine, gaudete.
We're back with Louise. Louise, on the break, you were telling me about getting mugged on account of your piercings.
wasn't really a mugging. It's what all of a sudden I thought. It's what it seemed like for that split instant. I have people come up to me here in Philadelphia a lot. Sometimes just, I guess, because of the amount of the piercings, the jewelry that I wear, or just a nape piercing, which isn't that common. People just come up and grab me, touch me, without saying a word. Your first instinct when you get touched on the street, when you're just walking, minding your own business, is to get freaked out, generally. And this woman came up and just snatched my plug right out of my ear. And I was like, oh my God, I'm being mugged. They're taking the jewelry out of my ears. And I turn around and she's like, this is real cool. This is cool. Where'd you get this? One of Jesse Jarrell's pieces from Fractal Creations. Mm-hmm. And she's like, real cool. Did you get this? You work? You a piercer? Do you work? And I was just like, okay. Not being mugged. Okay. I can relax. It was just a little scare. A little split-second scare. It was kind of amusing, actually.
Mm-hmm. Now, like you said, you used to pierce in D.C., and as I understand D.C. is sort of a... Is D.C. sort of a one-shop town as far as at least big shops go?
For a while, it was. For a while, pretty much there was the Leather Rack, which is you're pretty much a leather store. They sell, you know, leather pants, harnesses, dildos, things of that nature. But they did piercing. They did piercing there, mostly gay community piercing. That's mostly the clientele that they had. Then Drew Lewis and Tashi Onabi opened up perforations, and it was them two going on for a while. Then Jinx Proof opened up, and they opened up a tattooing and body piercing studio. So now pretty much they're the ones that are still going very, very, very strong. They have a really good location. They're going real strong. I hear a lot of good stuff about them. So they're the ones that are real strong. Perforations is now closed. Apparently Tashi packed up and moved to Michigan, so Perforations is no more. My good friend, Jason Simmons, who worked at Industrial Body Piercing, who used to work with me at Perforations, he stopped piercing to take on an internship for computer services type thing there. So he's not piercing anymore. Industrial Body Piercing, which was the shop I worked at briefly between Perforations and Infinite, is now closing and moving back to the Leather Rack. They were an offshoot to move the piercing away from the leather to try and differentiate it, make it more of a piercing shop, not just like a gay-oriented piercing studio.
Mm-hmm.
And it's moving back there. I guess it didn't work out. I don't know. So now it's pretty much Jinx Proof. There's other shops that have opened up now that piercing... That tattooing is found not to be illegal for a long time. People were saying tattooing's illegal in the district, la la la, and it turned out it wasn't true. So now there's a whole bunch of tattoo studios, and they do piercing, but don't know much about them, can't vouch for them, mm-hmm. good or bad, either way. But I always hear good stuff about Jinx Proof generally.
Now, Philly, on the other hand, definitely has some very, some clear, long-established big shops with some, real egos piercing at them. Is it a different piercing in Philly than it was in D.C.?
Very different. Very different. I would say that in D.C., I didn't pierce anywhere near as much. there's much more people getting pierced in Philadelphia. It amazed me when I first moved here.
When I moved to Philly, as well, I was shocked with how many tattoos just I saw on the street.
On the street, you see people with piercings, tattoos everywhere, all around. It's great. It really is good to see that many people out and having visible piercings and visible tattoos. But just the sheer volume that shops like Infinite and Inferno do amazed me. Even that, I mean, we have on 4th Street where Infinite is, there's Infinite. There's Forbidden Art that does piercing and tattooing. There's Body Graphics that does tattooing. There's two Philadelphia Eddies that do tattooing. It just right on one block, there's all of that. And then there's Inferno that's on South Street. There's Warrior that's on South Street. There's South Street Tattoos, which I think just changed their name. I don't know the name. There's lots of places right here in this concentrated little spot, so much that the city put an ordinance. There's no more. You have to get a permit to open up another piercing and tattoo shop in the South Street area. I think it's like maybe like a 4x4 block radius, 4x4 block, 5x5, something like that.
And
people in Philadelphia do, I would say in Philadelphia, more people get out of the ordinary things. Definitely. I would have never...
Philadelphia's a progressive town on a lot of levels. I think, you know, a musically progressive town as well, historically. As far as the origins of a lot of different kinds of music. Now you'd mentioned that you'd traveled to get the surface bar piercings by Tom. What was it about the surface bar piercings that you sort of right off saw, this is the way I want to do it, and it's worth going 500 miles to have it done?
Well, they work. They work. I tried monofilament. I tried regular steel barbells, curved barbells, rings, everything. Didn't work. Maybe it's just me. Even with surface bars, I still have a little bit of trouble. I don't have the best immune system around, but they work. I saw the pictures on BME of the spinals and the napes and back piercings. And then the spinals came in at 6 months, and the spinals came in over a year, and they were still there, and they hadn't moved. I was like, this looks good. I'm going to find out about this. I called Tom up. We talked, and he explained to me the reasoning behind it, why he decided to try this. And it made sense to me in my head. Not enough that I was automatically going to start doing them on everyone or recommending it. I probably wouldn't have been allowed to working at perforations, but enough for me to be interested and for me to make that trip. It all worked out really well. I went up there, as you said, for like this internet goth meeting, C-Channel, that they have every year in Toronto. There's a big hub of them in Toronto. Went up to see my friends from the internet and decided, hey, you know, I'm going to go and talk to Tom Bradza. And it just worked out. I didn't end up getting a surface bar piercing. We ended up trying a scalpeled Madison, like Emma did. And that didn't work. It had a little accident. Didn't end up staying, but it wasn't really because it rejected. It got torn out. Bad story. But just from talking with Tom, he was sitting with him and having him explain everything to me, draw pictures. It was just amazing to see someone that was into it to that point. Up until that point, I had a lot of trouble trying to talk to certain, you know, to a lot of other piercers. They didn't want to talk. They didn't want to share information, like stealing. They thought I was going to steal their secrets. And that was really the first piercer, besides the people that I had apprenticed with, that was open about it. And it was just really great. And it just left that in my mind. So I tried it. I got a nape done. I had a surface bar made. And I had my first nape done. And that lasted a good 3 years until I just so happened to get a really bad cellulitis infection in it, and I just had to let it go finally. But I still have another one that I had done by Meg at Infinite, and it's still there. Got a little scarred with a couple accidents, but still there. Hasn't really migrated. Hasn't done anything. It's fine. I've now done a lot of surface bar piercings, and I would say a good 95% of the time they stay, and they heal beautifully, providing they're done on someone that understands it takes a little bit more care and it will take a while for them to settle well. They're not going to heal in 4 months. You know, they might take longer than a year to completely come down.
Mm-hmm.
I make sure I talk to the people before they get it so they know what they're getting into, and I do say no. Some people I really don't think they can handle having a surface piercing and taking care of it. It's not like, hey, I want my forehead. So Joe Schmo walks in, I want my forehead pierced. No, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to talk to them. I send them away for a couple weeks, a month, to think about what I've told them, give them the information they need, and they can come back if they want to have it done.
Now, we talked at least a little about this in Tom's interview, but I'll ask you again, since people don't listen to everything. How is the aftercare different for a surface piercing, and specifically a surface bar piercing?
With a surface bar piercing, what I generally recommend, I'm still a believer in a twice daily cleaning with antibacterial soap. I know you kind of might disagree with that. I'm still a believer in that.
I agree with that.
Twice a day doing that. I recommend that they definitely do some nice sea salt soaks. In the right proportions, not just a whole bunch of salt, quarter teaspoon for 8 ounces of water. I recommend they do it at least twice a week, at least two soaks a week. If they can do it every day, they should do it every day. I recommend the soaks for at least 15 minutes, longer if they can do it. When you clean, I make sure that they know that you're not just cleaning around the balls. You can't just take a Q-tip and swipe, swipe, swipe around the balls. The surface bar is a staple shape, sometimes not a complete. It's odd-shaped. You kind of have to push the lift out a little bit and get it to come out, get some soap in there, and do a little bit of motion back and forth. With most surface piercings, they're done in a pliable area. If you're using a surface bar, I think this should be a fairly pliable area that can move around some. And it shouldn't be that hard to move the bar in and out to get the lifts to come out a little bit. And that's generally what I recommend. And make sure they have a healthy diet. Try not to abuse their body too much. It's definitely an important thing, too.
Mm-hmm. And you've actually been pretty adamant with promoting them. I remember you sent me a photo of, I think, a nape, and I put it in just the surface piercing section. And you were you sent me an email insisting that it was very important that it be marked as a surface bar.
I'm pretty anal about that because I'm a big believer in them. I really won't do surface piercings with anything else. You know, exceptions made on some, you know, certain close friends that are piercers themselves that want to try something out. They're piercers themselves. They know exactly what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
Sure, I'll do it the way they want to. They're big boys. They're big girls. They understand what they're getting into. Someone off the street, I'm going to give them what I think is the best possible choice. And it's surface bars have proven themselves. They've proven themselves time and time again.
Mm-hmm. Now, I talked to I spoke a few weeks ago with Mark Pantalone about sort of the progression of piercing and new procedures and the importance of all that. So when we come back in a minute, we're going to talk to you about that.
Okay.
Start all over again. Mm-hmm. Well, all those headlines, they just bore me now. I'm deep inside myself, but I'll get out somehow, and I'll stand before you and bring a smile. Your eyes, motion pictures,
Now, Louise, I know we said we were going to talk about new procedures, but on the break we were talking about materials a little. And you mentioned that monofilament nylon was not always the right material for people to use for straight bar surface piercing.
Mm-hmm.
Why is that?
A lot of people just have really bad reactions to them. Some people, like me, their bodies actually eat it. It starts to disintegrate. It dissolves. It's just not great for everyone. Yeah, there's people out there that can heal their piercings with vegetables and rocks because their bodies are that great at healing. Not, by any means, not everyone can do this. Not everyone can use anything anywhere. That's a very general statement. That sounded kind of dumb. But it just doesn't work for everyone. When it comes down to monofilament versus a surface bar, I'm still going to go with the surface bar. Surface bars have definitely proven to stay better than monofilament. Less scarring with surface bars than over monofilament. You generally see a lot of scarring on surface piercings done with monofilament. Even if it scars and that subsides some, you're still going to have the migration track left over from how they moved because of the pressure from the surface, from the monofilament. Monofilament isn't as giving as a lot of people think. If they have heavy pressure on them, they're not going to curve easily. You see, they're not like Tygon. You see, there's pictures on BME of people bending backwards Tygon bars. That doesn't happen with monofilament very comfortably. And I know this, having tried it, this is straight for me, it doesn't bend as well. Sure, surface bars are metal, they don't bend at all, but the shape, when done properly and placed properly, that's another important thing. I've seen a lot of surface bar piercings done with lifts that were just too long. They're going to get ripped out. The lifts need to be sized properly to the area. Different places are going to need different size uplifts. And just a lot of people just aren't thinking about it, you know. Even surface bars, so they don't solve all surface piercing problems.
Mm-hmm. Now, for lack of a better term, I'll call you a third generation piercer, in that maybe the first generation were the guys where there just wasn't piercing before that. They taught everything to themselves. Maybe second generation piercers were maybe 5 years after that. You know, some of them got a little bit apprenticing, you know, but most of them still taught themselves. Whereas this, you know, current generation of active piercers that you're a part of, they grew up in piercing as, you know, it was already a field. There were apprenticeships. How do you feel that that's either helped you or maybe even hindered you a little in your career?
I feel that it's helped me because I've had all of these people before me try all of this stuff. You know, I can't sit here and say that I can come up with a unique piercing to do because pretty much almost anything has been done. Pretty much anything has been done by people. There's people out there like Sky Renfro, John Cobb, been piercing for way longer than I have lots of great knowledge. They've already tried it. There's a basis to start out on, and then I can just build on top of that and help the evolution of the industry.
Let me ask you, what is a piercer? Is a piercer an artist? Is a piercer a technician? What is a piercer?
I think it depends on the piercer. It depends on the person and what they want to be. I believe that piercing is an art. I mean, when I sit down and I have someone come in, and we sit down and we talk about an ear project, what piercings they want, long-term, what else do they want to add? We get a whole thing going that's going to look good. That's what I'm trying to get. Something that's got some geometry thrown in, intersections. I believe it's an art.
Mm-hmm.
For a lot of people, it's strictly medical. I've known a lot of piercers that It's a job. They don't see it as an art form. They don't see it as a spiritual thing. It's a job. They just pierce and they do it on a medical level, and that's how they treat it.
They're technician poking holes in people.
Totally.
Mm-hmm. Now, how do you? I mean, I know you'd just be guessing because you're not apprenticing anyone right now, and I don't know if you plan on apprenticing anyone anytime soon. But how do you see future generations of piercers training differently than you did?
I don't know. I look at it and it scares me, and I look at it and I think it's good. There's a lot of people out there calling themselves piercers that I would say maybe butcher can be a too strong word, but some of them are cutting it really close. They're walking that line. And they're training people. They're training people out the wazoo. I know of stores that train people in 4 months. I know of a store that the longest apprenticeship is 8 months. That is not long enough. I apprenticed for 2 years, and I still didn't know everything that I needed to know. I still don't. I learn stuff every day. That's why I'm adamant about sharing things with other people. When they ask questions, you tell them exactly how it is. It's not about secrets. It's about giving people good information so they don't make a mistake. I've made plenty of mistakes in getting piercings, like with the surface piercings, monofilament, straight bars, curved bars. I scarred myself up pretty bad. You learn from that. Hopefully, I can keep other people from making these mistakes and keep other piercers or apprentices from making these mistakes on other people. It's different when you do it to yourself. It was my fault that I did all those things to myself. If I'm doing it to someone else, it's still my fault, but it's somebody else's body that I'm doing it on.
Mm-hmm.
That's the way piercers should think. It's not about doing really cool piercings that have never been seen before. It's about giving somebody something that's going to heal, that's going to complement their physical body. Everything doesn't look good on everyone. Not everyone looks good with a 10-gauge septum piercing. Some people need a 14-gauge or a 12-gauge, something smaller to complement their face. It totally varies. It's still going to fall in that art form thing. I want to look at someone's face and help them decide what's probably going to look best on their face. I'll tell someone flat out, I really don't think that's going to look good. If it's not going to give them problems healing, if it's just going to be a question of aesthetics, it's still their decision. If it's going to give them problems healing, I'm not going to do it.
I'm sure there's an aspect of psychiatric counselor as well.
Yep, to a certain point. There's a lot of people that come in and it'll fall into that case where you just all of a sudden turn into this therapist and they open up to you. And that's wonderful. That's great. Sometimes it can get a little stressful and it's a lot on your shoulders. But it is good to see that people trust me and other piercers to that point to open up like that.
Mm-hmm. Now, you'd said I could ask about anything, so I'll call you on that, and you can tell me to edit it out if I'm not asking something that I should.
Okay.
Now, you'd mentioned that in the past that you'd suffered from depression and to the point where it was medicated. Now, that seems to be quite common among piercers.
Mm-hmm.
What is the relationship between the two, between depression and piercing?
Now, that's a very hard question, because that's going to vary from person to person. In my experience, I would say a lot of people that I know that are piercers have had rough lives, have had messed up things happen to them, and it just leads to certain things. The choices that you make, screw-ups that you do, you end up with repercussions. That's my case. You know, I made a whole series of stupid decisions, and I saw what happened. I saw what I did, and that's what just killed me. Whew, straight down into a hole. And until I picked myself up, that's where I was for a good portion of the time. And like I told you before we started the interview, I just ended up overpowering it with as much as I could with my mind. I don't need medication anymore. I don't need any of these drugs to mess with my head. I would say when I was medicated during my depression, I don't remember thinking clearly at all. These drugs fogged my mind so bad, it was ridiculous. It was mm-hmm. completely ridiculous. And I don't think they're good for most people that they get prescribed to.
Was the depression, did that happen before you got involved in body modification?
It happened before I was heavily involved, as in piercing and doing it. I was piercing myself at this, but this was at a young age. This was 13, 14, 15, mm-hmm. that I was going through this. I was piercing myself, doing the punk rock thing, safety pins, order piercing needles from Gauntlet. Oh, they'll sell them to me. Yeah, I'll pierce my friends' noses and eyebrows. Things like that. I wasn't a professional at all. I was still toying with it and playing with it, gaining information. That's where it kind of started a little bit, until I found the internet and found all this great information to start me up real good.
Do you think that there's a potential danger to that as well?
Yes, there definitely is.
My belief is, really, you know, feed people, as full with information as you can, and the way that they deal with it is definitely their fault, not the fault of the information.
Definitely.
And I think that people make more intelligent decisions the more data you give them. We'll take one last break, and we've sort of saved the best to last. We'll talk about scarification and tongue splitting next. About New York City. Now, New York, it used to be sort of a mecca of piercing, tons and tons of it going on, lots of profitable shops. New York's practically dead now, and Philadelphia, while still probably one of the most pierced cities in North America right now, is not as busy as it was when you first started there. What happens if it drops off again and you're out of a job?
I'll go back to school. I'll go back to school, finish my degrees, maybe get some nice little laboratory job, hopefully maybe doing something in the genetics research area, which is my favorite out of any kind of biological sciences. I would, in an ideal world, I would work my tushy off, get a master's, maybe a PhD, and go into some kind of like AIDS research, cancer research on the genetic level. I think those are diseases that need to be attacked on that level, and mm-hmm. That's what I would ideally do if they hadn't been conquered already by the time I do all these things that are in my head.
Then let me ask you, having left an education that could have taken you on that path, do you feel, and I feel horrible asking this, do you feel that you're wasting your life?
No, not at all. There isn't a day that goes by that I don't stop and say I love what I'm doing. There isn't a day. What piercing did for me and for my self-esteem, I had really poor self-esteem before I started getting pierced. And what it did for me is I could look in the mirror and be like, hey, I like the way that looks on me. And then that turned into, hey, maybe I don't look that bad. Maybe I'm not so fat. Maybe I'm not so ugly. And it gave me more self-confidence. And I think it does that for a lot of people. A lot of people do it to reclaim their body. I don't regret leaving school in the least bit. I think I needed it. I'd just gone straight from high school to college. I think that people need to take a break. Most people, I think, should take at least a year break, go into the real world, get their own apartment, get a crappy little job at a coffee house or at a bookstore, and support themselves, or, become a piercer. Support themselves, pay their own bills, pay their own rent, so they know what life is about. Because what are you going to do when you're 20-something years old and you're out of college? Mommy and daddy have been spoon-feeding you this whole time. What if mommy and daddy die and there's no insurance policy?
What if mommy and daddy were wrong about what you should be doing?
Exactly. Exactly. That was one thing. I was having doubts about what I wanted to do. So I was making it worse on myself, getting bad grades because I wasn't interested. I said I needed to stop before I totally ruined my academic career. Took a break, and it was the best thing I could have ever done. Yeah, piercing gets annoying every now and then. You have a bad day, you get some rude people, you get a really busy day and you're really tired, but I still love piercing. Mm-hmm. I love to look at piercings, I love to think about piercings. I go on BME every day and look at the same pictures a lot of the time. I love piercing, and I think that's an important thing about being a piercer. I have known piercers that have said they hate piercing. You can't be a good piercer and hate it.
I'm amazed at how many piercers say that, especially piercers who've been piercing for a few years, you know, that just get to hate it on almost every level, and they stay in it because that's all they know.
It's all they know, and a lot of places it can make you decent money by comparison to what you would be doing without it. You know, yeah, right now, if I would have stayed in school, I probably could be making a lot more money than I am now. Maybe. Not probably. Maybe. I wouldn't trade it for the world. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't trade it for the world. The way that I put it to everyone is just I eat, just like the old adage goes, I eat, sleep, and shit piercing. That's what I do. I go to sleep at night thinking about piercing, thinking about customers that I've done things on, how their piercings are doing, thinking about the plans that they've told me that they want to do and what I can do to help them with those plans to get something that they can be happy with. That's what I think about. You know, I don't just leave piercing at the piercing studio. Sometimes I wish I could do that. Sometimes my lover wishes I could do that and just stop talking about it. But I can't.
Yeah, sure. My girlfriend wishes I'd stop talking about cars. Stop talking about monster trucks. Anyway, like we said before the break, piercing's not the only body modification you do. Let's start with scarification. Tell me about some of the scarification that you do.
I haven't done very many, admittedly, because not that many people want it done. Surprisingly enough, I wonder why. I did one back piece on a good friend of mine that was kind of a snowflake shape. We actually used biopsy punches to make circles, which I thought is a really great idea, and they heal very well. The middles, if you don't remove the tissue, if you're just using it to make that circle shape, the skin in the middle kind of raises up by itself during
really?
Healing, and you get a little bump right there. It's a really, really neat effect that came from that.
Mm-hmm.
I've done a leg piece that was just this kind of skewing of a chaos symbol, the chaos arrows, kind of skewed over his leg. I'm currently working on this back piece right now. It's a full back piece. We've got one sitting left to go, maybe another one after that. Set of runes down his back, some phoenix wings on his shoulder blades. We might take him down onto his arms. We'll see. You know, more people come in every day and ask for it. They look at my portfolio. A lot of people look at it and they're like, oh, ew, that's disgusting. Why would people do that? And I've had people look at that and be like, wow, that's amazing. So we'll see how it goes. You know, by no means, I'm no Lucas Spira. I don't do anywhere near as much as he does. And maybe they're not even as nice.
Although I think that with most of those guys, Lucas being a good example, one of the big secrets is that, you know, 10 of the photos in the portfolio, they're all on the same person.
Very true.
Very true.
I can say that all of my scarifications are on different people. That's the one thing I can say.
But you know as well that, you know, a lot of surface piercings, for example, that you see in a piercer's portfolio, there'll be one or two clients that come in and really get a lot of work.
Yeah.
People get into it.
Very true.
All right, now, tongue splitting. There's a lot of different methods out there. What method did you decide on? And this is you doing it on other people.
This is me doing it on other people, and a couple things I'll throw in here, because I've been approached by people wanting me to do this to them because of the pictures I sent to BME.
Mm-hmm.
I've done two tongue splittings. They were both done on friends. One of them was done on my very best friend in the world, who is my brother in my eyes. These are people that I see day in and day out constantly. We hang out. I can keep track of how they're doing. That was the big decision-making point in it. And actually, the first one that I did was kind of all coincidence. Meg was originally supposed to do it, and the baby, Meg was pregnant. She had a baby almost a year ago now. Maybe you know, maybe you don't.
Mm-hmm.
But so everyone can know, we received Nemo at Infinite,
which is
a great gift. Cute little tyke. And he came along the night that we were going to do it, the night that Howie said, I'm getting my tongue split tonight. The day before, he had tied his tongue off with monofilament. The way we were thinking about it is, he'll start it off with monofilament to cut into the tougher outer tissue first and to get a good straight line on there. And then we would use a cautery pen to chase it. Where this idea came from, another one of our employees, who I haven't spoken to, so I won't use the name, did this on themselves and used monofilament most of the way, then ran into problems at the end of it when the monofilament reached the scar tissue from their tongue piercing. And it wouldn't break through, in a lot of pain. Nothing could satiate this pain. Came into the store, they thought, hey, we'll use a cautery pen. Boom, snapped open, and that's where the idea came from. With Howie, it was different. He hadn't done the monofilament for anywhere near as long, so it was a very long procedure. We took a 15-minute break at one point. I would say the total working time was about an hour, maybe a little longer. That's a lot of time with no anesthetic. It's heavy. It hurt real bad. He admittedly said that it was the most painful thing he's ever done. But he sat through it. He sat through it like a champ. And that's perfectly healed. Also, he had a 9/16 tongue piercing. He had a lot in his mouth already. It helped with the healing. It kept the pieces totally apart. With the 9/16 tongue piercing, when we were done, we had an inch-long split. And then as the tongue piercing shrank like it would, even if the tongue wasn't split, we've got about a 3/4 length now healed.
So it didn't close at all? No. I guess largely because of that piercing.
Because of that piercing. The second one that I did was on my friend Tiny, and he'd approached about it and brought it up before, and we just finally settled on doing it. He used the monofilament, same thing, for a couple days, and he only had an 8-gauge. He was wearing an 8-gauge in his tongue, so it was a little different with him. His tongue is also a lot shorter than Howie's, the first one that I did. So his tongue splitting isn't anywhere near as long because of that. It still healed perfectly, didn't try and close, didn't do anything, and it still healed fine. The second procedure was a little bit more grueling. Under the circumstances that we were in, Tiny is a much bigger gentleman than Howie was, so I'm kind of dealing with someone that I kind of had to straddle on their knee to be up in their face to comfortably do this, and it was a lot longer. It was very, very, very grueling to me, being that these are my friends, and I know I'm causing them a great amount of pain at their request, you know, at no charge, at their request. It was emotionally grueling to me, just knowing that I'm doing this to them. I'm also a piercer. I don't spend over an hour with most clients back there actually doing a procedure. You know, with cuttings, yeah, cuttings don't come along every often. With a tongue piercing, it's not going to take an hour and 15 minutes to do. It was just a very tiring experience. Because of this, I've sent people to Steve Hayworth, told them to talk to him. I've sent people to Dr. Bacino, which is, I believe, who did your tongue splitting.
Yeah.
That's what I've been doing lately. I can't say that I have a desire to do it again unless it's on the right person.
Mm-hmm.
So I will say that out there. You know, all you guys, yeah, those pictures, they might look neat. Yeah, I've done them. It's something I would probably only do again on a close friend.
But you haven't done it on yourself.
No, it's not something I want. The aesthetics of it, the aesthetics on other people, I can't find attractive. On myself, it's not in my plans for body modification. I did toy with it for a little while, because I believe I emailed you and asked you about it several years ago, or mm-hmm. when you got it done. I decided it wasn't for me. It's something that I don't want. It looks beautiful on other people. It's just not something that I want. You know, I believe, have you met Essie in New York?
I've never met her, no.
The things that she can do with her split tongue are amazing. The motion, the independent motion that she has with her tongue splitting is crazy. And even with that, I just, I kind of looked at it and it was one of those things that I toyed, I think, because it was a new modification and something different. And I try and keep myself from doing things like that. You shouldn't do things just to set yourself aside. Yeah, in piercing, you're going to set yourself aside to a certain point. And with doing a lot of piercing and heavy, heavy piercing, large gauge stuff, stretching, you're definitely setting yourself aside. But you shouldn't just do it for that sole reason. There should be something else there, I think. There definitely should be something else there. Otherwise, you're getting them for a stupid reason.
And you'll be very unhappy with them.
Very unhappy with it. Granted, it's not a tattoo. It's not there permanently. But it's still a scar, and it's still a lot that you have to deal with. Mm-hmm. Tattoos are, I think, a lot easier to heal than piercings.
Well, they heal in a couple of days.
Yeah, you know, piercings can take months and years. I believe that a lot of surface piercings are take over a year to heal. I tell people they need to expect that this might take longer than a year. Mm-hmm. Understand this. It's not cake. It's not easy.
Yeah, especially a deeper one. Now, let's see. We're almost out of time. Is there anything, you think there's anything we've missed, or are we doing pretty well?
I think we're doing pretty well. We've talked about a lot of stuff.
Yeah,
we've jumped back and forth a lot of stuff. I can't really think of anything.
All right.
Anything
well,
I would like to throw in.
We'll remind people one last time. They can get in touch with you via Infinite in Philadelphia. I guess anyone in Philly already knows exactly where that is, I'm sure. Online, it's...
www.infinitebody.com.
All one word. All right. And I'll, of course, link that as well as your email from the interviews page. And thanks a lot for talking to us, Louise. And I'll remind people that, Louise, you've got the... You've got the bonus of having your interview up probably for 3 weeks, so...
Rock on.
We'll see everyone again in September.
Goodbye.